Before we get to today's episode, I want to tell you about IBIS Pro, one-on-one tutoring for everything under the sun. They do K through 12 and college level security exams, SIE Series 6, Series 7, Series 66, SAT, ACT, essay writing, college prep. They also do the LSAT, GMAT, GRE, Florida, and California bar exams. They prioritize education above all else. I personally have used IBIS Prep and it's one of the best tutoring services that I've ever been with. I suggest y'all go and try it out. Tell them the King of Rigoni Show sent y'all. Thank you. Hey everybody, welcome back to the King of Rigoni Show on the Believe Network and the Draft Network. We have a special guest today, Mr. Rojo.
Very special.
How you doing today, bro?
Good, man. How y'all doing?
We're good.
Blessed.
You know what's even better? That I was able, is really nice, you know, I was able to go to practice, like, not yesterday, the day before yesterday, and I saw bro out there. And then he says, and I didn't even know, like, it's nice to even sit with you, Mr. D, King. Yep. And really, because what I was trying to say to you is that when you came into this program, you know, from where you, from Houston, right?
Yep.
When you came there, you kind of, you saved the program, saved the face of the program, you know, because with your play, you rejuvenated us, you with the style of play, your tremendous heart for winning, what you put into it, you know, like what you put out on that field, you know, and every single play, like it was amazing to watch you, bro. And it's like, thank you. And, you know, I'm looking forward to see you keep that going. And yeah, thank you for that, because you came in and did wonders to the program. And, you know, you made us really, really, really happy as University of Miami players, you know, as you said.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that. It's crazy because I remember, you know, when I came on my official visit right before the 2020 season, I was with one of the coaches and they had FaceTimed you. And I actually talked to you on my official visit.
Coach Fields. I remember that stuff.
FaceTimed me.
Yeah, so and it's nice because it's almost like you just went beyond my expectations. You did, like, I'm not gonna say that. I expect that, you know, but it was just marvelous. You know what I'm saying? Like to see you do it like that. Like, you know, it was just great, man. And
sure.
You're like me, you know. You didn't come in with the 6'4" and the this and that. You came in as you are and played as you are and
executed.
Yes, and wow, I mean, for without injuries,
yeah,
it's we gone a lot of places. You know what I mean? And with the system that we had at the time, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, man. And we've staying another year. even give us one more little bit of you, you know?
Yeah. I appreciate it, bro. I hate that I got hurt. You know, I feel like I could fully, you know, do what I wanted to do at the University of Miami, but you know, everything happened for a reason.
And I was blessed. You did not, though. You did what you had to. You did it. And you did. That's why I'm. But that's why I'm here to attest. You did that. You did, because without you, we no one's even talking about us.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying, though, you came in and led that. You took the role as a leader, and you know, sure. You got ranks. And remember, come on, we're coming from a way below.
Yeah.
They got us like mixed up. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. I got you, yes, sir.
So yeah, respect to that, man.
I appreciate you coming on our show, man. It's a really big deal to us, for sure.
No, yeah. You know, first, you know, we want to acknowledge, you know, you obviously are, you know, the son of Bob Marley. He's such a legend, and we have so much respect for him and his message. But, you know, we really brought you on to talk about you, to talk about your journey, you know, from a child in Jamaica, coming to America, learning football, playing for the U, and then transition into, you know, successful businessman in various countries.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Well, let me tell you, it wasn't planned out, because, you know, when I'm in Jamaica, I never knew the game of football. I only saw it on TV once. I used to call football rugby. And this is before I was 12 years old. You know, I saw one game in my life, which was like, I think it was the Redskins. I only remember the name of the color. And I was on a satellite, and this is 1984. So I never knew anything about football. But they expelled me because I lived in a place called Spanish Town. And where I lived, I used to have to wake up like 5 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, I had to go to a school because I live in the country and my school's in the town. So I got to get up at like 5 a.m. and take like 3 buses to the school and all this shit. And then, you know, got to do that. But I was always an athlete, you know. My thing, I always dreamed of, my dream was to be a soccer player, like to like what I wanted to be as a grown up. Like when you ask me, what are you going to do when you be a... So what do you, they used to say to me, what do you want to be when you grow up? I said, I want to be a football player, but I meant soccer, you know? And the guy would say, well, come on, you need, that's not realistic. You need a real job. I said, well, I want to be a lawyer. I just said that to whatever. So they expelled me, man, in 1984. I came to America because when I came to America, I had my dad's 2 brothers, right? And they were the ones that were going to discipline me, put me in shape. But my dad passed away in 1981. You know, when I was 9 years old. So between 9 years old and 12 years old, I kind of lost my mind a little bit. You know, I started doing things just my way. You know, I didn't care. Cause I started to see the really how people felt about certain things. So I said, oh yeah, you feel like that about me, but I don't want to be here. You know, I don't want to be in this school. It was a private school. And then I was like, because I'm from Spanish Town, they look at me kind of weirdish, you know, because, you know, it's not, you know what I'm saying? So I got expelled because of that reason. I started skipping a lot of school. I didn't like the system anymore. I didn't like the way they looked at me. So I didn't want to be around them type of people. Anyway, they kicked me out. And the one good thing they did do, when the day they expelled me, they asked my brother Steven to call his mother, because we have different mothers, and to find out if my grandmother would take me in Miami, you know, would she take me from Jamaica and kind of help me out because, you know, my father passed away and they were kind of worried about me, you know what I mean, in regards to my life, because I was a rude boy, you know, like running the streets, but meaning I'm in the streets, like I got to take the bus, so I'm dealing with like everyday in the functioning of like real life people, you know. I'm not like school and then taking a bus home. Like, no, I gotta take the bus, I gotta pay the conductor, I gotta have enough change, I got $6 to get to school, so in that $6 I gotta have my lunch money, and then I have to have my bus fare to get back home. So I gotta be able to function with this little bit of money I have, you know what I mean? Sometimes you spend out your money because you get a little hungry and you have no money. So you gotta figure out how you're gonna get back home. So I used to have to ask people, can they give me a dollar, like on the road, you know? Hey, say sorry, I don't have any bus fare, can you give me a dollar, please? You know, and I made my way home, you know. So anyway, that was me growing up in Jamaica. So I came to America now. My uncles, like, they were for real. They're like, oh yeah, you think this ain't Jamaica. You're not going to just do what you want. You know what I'm saying? Yes. So they kind of locked me down a little bit. They, you know, I would go to my school now was like a bicycle ride away. Pinecrest, close to UM. I lived 7 minutes from the UM at the time. So my school, Pinecrest Elementary, is like in the neighborhood. So now I'm riding a bicycle to school. I'm like, what? A bicycle to school? So, you know, so boom, I go there. And this is 1984, 85. So flag football, they're going to play, before flag football, on Thursday, they play kickball, you know? Yeah. I say, kickball? So what the fuck is kickball?
Before we continue on with today's episode, I need to tell you about our sponsor, Athletic Greens. Tons of people take multivitamins, but it's important to choose one that is top quality. With one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, superfoods, probiotics to start your day right. Their special blend of ingredients supports gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, energy, recovery, focus, and aging. It's also lifestyle friendly and fits a wide range of diets. There's only 1 gram of sugar and no chemicals or artificial anything. Reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/believe. That's B-L-E-A-V. Again, athleticgreens.com/believe. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any disease. Athletic Greens, take ownership of your health.
So kickball is like baseball and soccer, right? I'm like, what the fuck is this? Well, I'm a soccer player, so I get up, I'm blasting that. I'm little too, I'm like, wow. It's like, oh, wow. And I'm running around the pit. I'm like, yeah. And when I grew up, I used to like to, like, if I defend myself, I throw a stone. I used to throw the ball at you really hard, you know? Yeah. So then on Fridays, they play football. But during these times, every Sunday, you know, you have like Dan Marino and Mark Duper and the Clayton brothers. So I'm here and so I'm not getting this football spirit because it's the year the Dolphins went to the Super Bowl against Joe Montana, right? 1985, 84, 85 season. So I'm now getting into this whole football thing. So when the Friday comes and they say, okay, we're going to play flag football, and they bring out this the ball. like, what the fuck is this? And then I'm like, what are you doing this? They say, you hold it like this, you know? You have to hold it like this, and then you... So when they would do that, because I love the sport so much, because I know like every Friday I want to win, you know, because what I did do, I can catch the ball and then I can move around, you know, like they couldn't touch me, but I wanted to learn how to throw the ball. So Dan Marino, I would watch Dan Marino. I'd study him and I developed a quick release. So as a little boy, my dream was to be a quarterback like you, you know?
Yeah. As everybody's dream back then.
Yeah. So I'm throwing, I used to stand in my driveway and throw the ball in the hoop, the basketball hoop, you know? And I threw it. So I remember now, you know, we played a thing I learned about football. So now I'm getting in, this is the seventh grade. So now I'm getting sixth grade. So I leave elementary school. I go to junior high school. I'm at a junior high. So the seventh grade now I've been through the whole football system. And now I'm like, okay, we're playing flag football in PE, you know? But I know nothing about the Optimus League yet, right? And they said, oh, there's an Optimus League up there that you can try out. I said, yeah? Yeah, you can, Sunnyland. So I said, I'm going to go up there. But remember, all I would do in my yard every day was throw the ball in the basket, and I'll ask my uncle, because I love the Mark Clayton and Mark Duper. I love them so much. I study them, you know. So I say, uncle, throw me the ball. And my uncle, he didn't really want to throw me the ball, because, you know, he was American, you know, but he was like, what, doing something inside. I'm like, uncle, throw me the ball. So he tells me, run an L route. like across, you know. Yeah. So I run up like say 10 yards, and when I say he drew that ball, he drew that. I just used to snatch it, you know. I'm snatching it. So now my eighth grade year, I go to try out for the Sunnyland Sun Devils, they call them. I don't like the name Sun Devils. I say Sun Angel, but that's what they call them back then, you know. Anyway. So I go out there, and I'm in the eighth grade. My weight is now 135. So I get out there and they say, what position you play? I say, I don't know. I say, well, I want to play quarterback. So it's a quarterback. Well, we have, you know, there's the, you have, they have their team. They have this guy, the quarterback. It's never going to happen. So they put me at a position called split end. So, all right. They throw me a ball in practice. The first ball, I ran a 70 flag, a flag route. So I ran the route and they threw me the ball, but I did like this. Instead of me looking like, they threw the ball to the sideline. So I looked inside and I put my hands on the outside. So I watched Mark Duper. So I'm catching the ball like the pros. I didn't turn my head to the outside. That would carry me out of bounds. I turned my head inside to catch the ball over my outside shoulder, right? And when I call the ball, they say, "Oh, you don't know what he's doing. He don't know what he's doing." From the pros to the bench, right? So teams, I'm sitting on the bench, and the coach, the offensive coordinator, he's not putting me in. I'm there. I said, "All right, no problem." First, I but anyway, my number was number 83 because of marketing. We're number. Now they coach. When they fired the coach, the other coach kind of liked me. He says, "All right, we're going to give you a shot. 70 drag." I said, "All right." Every time I touch the ball, this final six game, I mean, so like the ball, I used to snatch that thing, you know? That was my thing. I used to, anywhere, like receiver first. So my ninth grade year, I was too heavy. I didn't play any football in ninth grade. I only played a flag football game. 10th grade now, I go to Palmetto High School. So I got to try out for JV. They said, "What position you play?" It's like quarterback.
Quarterback again, huh?
Quarterback again. So now, the first practice, I have to put my hand underneath the center. So I don't know this part of the game. This is the part I didn't understand how to do it. You know, I'm like, "Oh, shit." I'm not like, wait. You know, it's like, wait, I can't. Like, yeah. In the shotgun, I was good. So every time I put my hand under the center, I was a little nervous. Like, I can't, like, I'm not used to that. You know, it wasn't something I grew up doing, you know? So yeah. I was fumbling the ball all the time. So they said to me, okay, you know what? You can't play quarterback, but you can throw the ball because I had a good arm. So they said, "We're going to put you at fullback." I said, "Fullback? I'm not playing fullback." I really wanted to play running back because you couldn't touch me, you know? So I said, "All right, gonna put you at cornerback." "Cornerback? All right, which number do you want?" I said, "Well, I want number 10 because number 10 was the number Pele wore, you know, because I'm a soccer player." So the best soccer player number is 10. So I took number 10. So now we at JV and I'm at cornerback. Everything they throw to that side is mine. You don't catch a ball on me. Everything. So the coach was like, "Oh, he used to catching coconuts in Jamaica." That the because they didn't understand it because they didn't coach me. I'm just doing this on the raw talent, you know. So my JV team did good. I was a cornerback, you know. So now we're gonna go spring ball, and I'm getting into the 11th grade. So Coach Solinger, who you met there. He was at UM and they changed the system. Coach E came in. He was with Jimmy Johnson. He left. So he came to coach my school for spring. So the first day of spring ball, they moved me from cornerback and they moved me to strong safety. Now, remember, I knew nothing about football. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what these positions do. But all I know, you come this way, I'm going to hit you. You know what I mean? So the first day of practice, they have me at strong safety because, you know, now I'm from JV and I was so good at cornerback that I'm thinking, you know, I need to, you know, I'm going to play now. I'm going into my 11th grade year. I got to start, you know. So they put me at strong safety and it's shorts and helmet. The running back, he was a senior at the time. 11th grade, he's going to be a senior. They threw him under a like, you know, when the back come out the backfield.
Yeah.
They run that little, you know,
swing route.
Yeah, swing route. Yeah. But he ran that little swing route, but I was right there when he caught that little swing pass.
I already know what happened.
I bust his face open with the helmet on. Pop! They said, "What the fuck is he doing?" I said, "What do you mean? You mean what I'm doing? What the fuck? Like, this, I'm not supposed to do that." So there was a linebacker, number 55. His name was McIntosh or something. He hurt his knee that day. The first day of pads, he hurt his knee. So now, this is, they're like, "All right, who are we going to put at linebacker?" Marley. I said, "All right. Now we got to choose numbers." I said, "What number you want?" I said, "Well, I want number 44. Why number 44? Because I used to love Brian Bosworth.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but I'm a UM boy still, but
yeah, I know. Don't like Bos.
Yeah, but he tied his head, you know? He's like a warrior to me, right? Brian Bosworth. So I took 44, you know?
Yeah.
Now, first year spring practice, the guy that's starting at, it's like we ran a 50 defense. First year spring practice, the guy is there, he's a senior, and I'm my first day at linebacker. I don't know nothing about no Eagle defense. I don't, we're 50 Eagle. I don't know what they're doing. So every time I line up, I say, "Hey, man, what am I supposed to do?" he said, "Well, you got to go to this gap." I said, "Which one? This one?" "Yeah." And then if it's away from you, you got to go that gap. I said, "Okay, cool." Every time they snap the ball, I made the tackle. The coach, the next day, the coach like, "Who the fuck is blocking 44? So now me and the guy, you know, I'm like, they line up, "Hey, 50 Eagle, cover two or some shit." I'm like, "Hey, man, what am I supposed to do?" He said, "Man, you're on your own." So I ended up, you know, starting at linebacker my 11th grade year. I led the team in tackles. I dominated my position. But this time now, I'm meeting the guys like my 11th grade year. So I'm, you know, I played a little football, and now I just ran into Robert Bailey from University of Miami. You know,
Rob. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I ran into Robert Bailey because he's half Jamaican too. But the person he knew that knew my brother was Jamaican. So I went to this house and he was there. And he's telling me, "Play." "Oh, yeah." I said, "I want to go up there. Take me up there," you know. So going into my senior year now, I was like, he takes me to UM. I was like, "Wow." I said, "I'm going to play here." He said, "Man, what are you talking about? You don't know about no football. You Jamaican." I said, no, you don't know nothing about me. I play for Palmetto." He said, "What?" I said, "Yeah, I play for Palmetto. I'm going to play here." He said, "Yeah, whatever." But I'm not on the radar, you know. Nobody don't know of me. So my senior year now, going into my senior year, I built this defense. And because every time I was very strong, every time I go under the weights, I go, "Booyah! Booyah!" You know? So I built this thing called the Booyah defense. So I took the team to like fourth in the state and such. But the thing I did though, going into that season, Coach Erickson had just moved into the area, right? His son is going to attend Palmetto, but also Sonny Lubick, who's defensive coordinator, his son is in summer school there. So I befriended them. So I got into that system. So how I got on UM radar, I went to a summer camp, like that same, going into my senior year. I went to summer camp and I was with the linebackers and they had this big old boy, 6'2", whatever. I'm 5'8". But when I ran track, I did the 4x100 relay and I did the high jump. I was jumping 6'2", you know. So they had this one drill. No, you jump over the bag. It's me and him. He's like, "Wait a fucking minute." I said, "Yeah, let's go over that motherfucker." So I'm playing defense, and they gave me the best offensive player for because they didn't want to give me the best defensive player. They gave me the best offensive player at the camp. So now I'm on the radar. Right? Like, okay. So now I befriended Sonny Lubick's son, and we start becoming friends. I'm like, yo, tell your dad, watch out for me. He's the coordinator.
Yeah.
So going into that season, I ended up defense ranked number one in the state. Not sorry, whatever, Miami, whatever. We took this the team to number fourth in the state. I was ranked my team. And of course, I led them in tackles. At that time, there was like some really top-notch players around in Miami-Dade. And we this is what happened to me in the district championship game. I am the up man on the punt, you know. This is one of my this is the warrior spirit. So I'm the up man in punt team. I'm the starting linebacker, but I'm the up man for the punt returner. That ball, they punt the ball, it came short. So I took off. I broke, you know. But the freaking punter, like I tried to outrun the punter, but he got an angle on me and he broke my ankle.
Dang.
My ankle. So now I come off, I jump up and I run off the field and I tell them, tape me up. I said, tape me up. So they tape me up, bro. And I went out there like with a cast on my leg. Like I said, I'm going out there. I'm ready. Broken leg, you know. The first play. This is when reality strike you. The first play. I like this, you know, and I get there and the fucking offensive lineman, he just came and just walked right through me. I had one leg, you know, so I jumped up, I hopped off the field. So I broke my ankle in that year. But Sonny Lubick, he promised me a scholarship. And he said, listen, you pass your SATs, you get your scholarship. I ended up passing my SATs, and I got the last scholarship to UM. The last scholarship. So when I got to UM now, here I am at UM. Like, what are you doing here? They used to say, oh, you're only here because he's Bob Marley's son. So you say that, that's fighting words. I'm fighting the locker and all this shit. So I go to UM, they put me at cornerback. I'm like, cornerback? So I got that right. So cover two, I would say, yo, Marley, he jammed the shit out you. But we was in practice one day, and it's a cover two, and this was Cobra Jones, Chris Jones. We in cover two. I jammed the motherfucker, right? But it's a deep ball, you know? So I jammed him. We in cover two, and I'm chasing, you know what I'm saying? So I look like I'm the one in trouble, the safety not over the top. Yeah. So we walk into the locker room, and the sirens go off. Woo! They bomb me, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So I was like, they laugh at me. He said, oh, Marley, he's 6'4", but look, he's squashed into a 5'8". Body.
I got all the short jokes, too, bro.
Yeah. So I'm doing that. So I'm now getting ready thinking like I deserve to be playing. Like I don't want to be redshirted, you know, but I got redshirted. So I'm getting myself ready for the season now and going into spring, I'm going to be a cornerback, you know. Before the first meeting, I get a call into the office. Rohan, you're moving your linebacker. I said, linebacker? Damn, I was losing all this weight. I said, I done lost all this weight. And I look at the board and I'm like, wow, what? Because I don't know what the Willie,
the Will.
Will, yeah. I'm like, oh, what, WL, what's it? So they put me at linebacker, but I'm fourth string. I said, fourth string. All right, cool. I get out there. Derek Golden, he used to wear this long, like a tail, you know, they gave me the tail. So now remember, we go out there, we look sweet now. We got in practice, I got my little tail and everything. Inside run. I say, inside run? Okay, let's go. This way, we're going to play pass.
You see ball, get ball right there.
Hey, you got to play no pass. You don't gotta look for nothing outside. Let's go. So the first, my first practice, man, I was, you can't block me. You can't block me. I don't care what the fuck you are, where you come from. You ain't gonna block me. You can't block me. Fuck, I'm stronger than you. I don't care. I'm stronger. I'm the strongest. I mean, I live in 465 them times. Yeah. That was my max. So after that first practice, so we in spring, right? So Warren Sapp and I, we sit next to each other in the locker, in the rookie's locker. He says, "Man, bro, they have been fucking you. You should have been that linebacker all this time." So I ended up now moving up to sharing third string. By the end of spring ball, I'm second string backing up Jesse Armstead. And that year, my first year playing, I was the number five leading tackler on the team. The three-star linebackers, one safety than me as a backup. Got the game ball. The next year, led a team in tackles.
In 93?
93, right?
Yeah, even though I should have made more tackles, but I sat out a couple of games. I didn't want to, Georgia Southern. Like, for instance, we played against Florida State, and we played Colorado, Florida State. That's, I damn near played 84 plays. And then we got Georgia Southern. I'm like, "Coach, I'm taking this game off. I need a rest. I need a break for this. I have nothing to gain playing against Georgia Southern."
Oh, shit. That's funny.
Yeah, I have nothing to gain to this Georgia Southern. So I took that game off. So I should have had 100 tackles. The first outside linebacker to lead the team. They don't talk about that shit. They don't talk about the first outside linebacker lead the team in tackles. They forget about that. Yeah, so I did that, and you know, I built a lot of great camaraderies on the team, a lot of brotherhood, man. You know, it's beautiful. So anyway, I know y'all have some questions. that was my little journey to like the life of football. You know, how
you answered like the first half. You worked in it perfectly.
Yeah.
It actually led up to, you know, the next question, you know, what was it like, you know, when your time at the U ended, like when
you were done? Oh, man. Well, I ended it a little bit like a rebel, kind of. My junior year, you know, Coach Tuberville left and they changed the system a little bit. They came in, they tried changing the way I tackle. They didn't like the way I was tackling. They said I'm indisciplined. So they would start to mess with me psychologically. You know what I mean? They would start me on, they played a game on me because I started growing my hair out, the locks, you know? So I remember they didn't want me to do any more interviews. I was up for the Butkus. This is just politics. I was up for the Butkus. Not up for the Butkus, but I was a Butkus nominee going in. They removed preseason. That. Yeah, preseason.
Yeah.
They didn't do that. They removed me from that. So that's when they didn't accept Rastafari, you know? And then, of course, you know, my freedom of life and how I live my life.
Yeah.
So I played that my junior year. I graded out like 98. Like, I'm 99. When I don't make any false move. I'm perfection. Like, I'm perfect. But I hurt my knee. Ciao. I hurt my knee on one play against Virginia Tech. Was a draw play. Everybody bailed out, and I stayed there because I read my keys. And I lit his ass, chop. Fire! But when I'm fucking ramming through the motherfucker, I'm lighting him up and I'm going through him, you know? The nose guard, the fucking center is bull. Not the pancake. I call it a fucking bull rush because that's what happened to him, but it's a pancake. He's pushing him back while I'm over the top of him making a tackle. His helmet hit me in the inside of my knee and I get an MCL. Yeah, that's how it hurt my knee. And then, that was it. My real dream was, of course, like everyone else, I wanted to play the NFL. That was a goal, like dream of mine. I came back, I got injured, went down to Jamaica, I left school, I went to Jamaica to do my own rehabilitation. I didn't care. I came back for the bowl game. I left mid-season and I came back just in time for the bowl game. They played me like sparingly, you know. Even though the guy told me, hey, if you play, if you got any, because they never saw me. I just left school. Nobody saw me. I came back. Coach Reuben is checking my knees. Like, bro, if you get if anything touches your knee, you're done. I'm like, I say, Doc, give me the fucking brace. I say, Doc, give me the fucking brace. I don't give a fuck. Give me the brace. But Roman, are you sure? I say, yeah, Doc. Yeah, I'm sure. I take that chance. You know? Going out there and thing. But I remember, like, so after the Orange Bowl, I was having a son, and he was Nico. He went on to play for Tulane, but he was born in Haiti, you know? And when I went down for his birth, I sat and leave school. This one leaves school, Coach Erickson is leaving, and Butch Davis is coming in. I was like, I'm a rebel anyway. So I'm like, fuck that shit. I'm not playing for a new coach. You're not gonna play my fucking emotions. I'm not doing that shit. I'm not doing that. I'm done. I'm out too, but I'm in Haiti, and I don't declare before like the 6th or something. Like, you gotta declare. When you gotta declare?
February 6th or something like that.
January. It wasn't January. January. It's January 6th.
Yeah.
January 6th. So my son was born on the 5th. Haiti don't have no phones over there, so I can't call the school to say, hey, I'm not coming back to school. I wanna try out for the NFL, you know?
Yeah.
So I came back on the 7th, which is my Christmas, and I go to school. I go to the media department. I say, hey, Linda, I'm not coming back. I'm done. I didn't even go tell the coaches. She calls the NFL. They says, oh, sorry, it's too late. No exceptions to the rule. But I don't know anything about a supplementary drive. I don't know shit. I don't know nothing. I said, well, all right. No exceptions to the rule. Well, fuck it. I retire. I said, fuck. I walked out. I said, fuck it. I'm done. I left. Because I didn't like some of the treatment, you know, from some of these kind of stuff. Because, you know, listen, your personal has everything to do with your development. You know what I mean? And when you have a player's coach, you got to love these guys. You know, guys that are player's coach, you got to love them. But when you find coaches that come with ego and then in your development, just not for my soul, you know? So I said, I quit the team. Not quit the team. I wouldn't say quit. I left.
You was done. You was done, yeah.
Done. Not come back. I'm not playing for Butch Davis. I'm not doing that shit. I'm not under that type of shit. I'm not like that. Just in my own mind, you know, I mean, animals vibes. So now I said, brothers, finally, I'm done. I'm going. So I go join up with my brothers, and they're musicians, you know. And I said, so they're like, what the fuck is Ro doing? He's like, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm your security. We're going to be your security. So I'm on the tour, you know, and before the tour starts, I get a call from my CFL. Hey, Ro, and the CFL want to give you a try. I was like, the CFL, more like the NFL, click. So I hung up the phone on them, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm there on tour with my brothers. I get in a fight with, almost get in a fight with one of the band members, you know, my brother's guitarist, you know, because I'm on the bus with all the band members. I didn't want to drive the family bus because I'm working. And the guy, I was in my bunk. And I was starting to sweat in the bunk. You know, we're in Germany. And I come out of the bunk and I say, hey, the driver, it's an upstairs, downstairs bus. And I say to the driver, I say, hey, Rob, can you turn off the heat in the bunks? And one of the band members say, this ain't Ziggy's bus. You don't got no seat over here. I say, yeah. I say, what you say? I walked up to the front. I say, hey, Rob, turn off the fucking heat in the fucking bunk. When I turned around, the one of the band members, he's like, he picked up a fork to stab me. And I grabbed his hand, you know? And I grabbed him, but all I could think about is my brother's guitarist. Everyone was saying, I'm too angry, I'm too aggressive, you know? It's always my fault. So after that, it was like a big thing. My mother, my stepmother at the time, Mama Rita, after she called me, you know, my brothers got all upset. Hey, who the fuck you don't talk to my brother like that? Blah, 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 blah. But then it's his band member, you know? It's like, it's going to affect like their way of, you know? Yeah. So Mama Rita called me and said, hey, son, you love football. Give this CFL a try. She's like, get the fuck, you have to get off the road. So I couldn't tell her no. I took my bags. I packed my big old bag, you know? And this is my departure from UM. So I fly to Canada now, to Ottawa. And I come off of the plane and I'm walking, you know, and the guy says to me, you got a pretty big bag. You plan on staying here a while? I'm like, what the fuck is he talking about? Like, I says, well, what's that? And I said, what do you mean? He said, oh, you're on a tryout. I said, a tryout? A tryout? Okay. I said, let's take me to the facilities. So now we're in the town. So I go to the administration department. I get there. They're like, where's Rohan Marley? Like, they're expecting some 6'2 guy. You know, they're Canadian. They only hear my name. They don't know what I look like. Like, what the fuck you mean? I'm Rohan Marley. What do you mean? I said, where's the field? Where's everybody at? Oh, we have to drive there to the facilities. So now, okay. So now I'm the last guy in the camp. Obviously, when I get there, oh, who does he think he is? He's a prima donna. How does he come in last after the vets? Who does he think? That's because he's Bob Marley's son, but they don't know what the hell I'm, they don't know the other side of it. Yeah. So now I'm growing my locks. I haven't touched football. This is May. I haven't did anything in regards to working out. Nothing since January, since I left that day out of the Hex Center. So it's May, and I'm like, holy shit. I said, all right, bro. First day of practice, it says, all I can think about is like, what did you learn at UM, you know? Because the good thing, they ran a 4-3 defense. I said, all right, they put me at Willie. I said, okay. All right. What play is that? Okay, oh, it's the same as this play. Okay. So the first thing I start remembering my plays from UM, the playbook, it was the same scheme. But they had 12 men. So the first thing they did, they ran a guy at the backfield. I covered him. Oh, he can cover. They said that. So they had me on the third string. They put me on third string. When I first got there, the guy that was at the number one position, he was like 6'4", 295. I was like, oh, my God, this is what it's like in Canada. So they cut him. Big and worthless. They cut him, so they got me on the third string right now, right? So I'm only there to be able to play one preseason game, you know? So I don't know that the fucking field is 10 times wider. So here we go again. A wheel route by the running back in the preseason. So I'm feeling this guy on my side. And I'm like, I got him, you know, I think I got the sideline right here. The quarterback rolls out. I take my hand off this guy for 2 seconds. This fucking guy is way over there. they bombed me. The guy scores. So, all right. Now it's cut day. Now, the last day of practice, we're at the camp. I'm the last guy inside the locker room. When you go in the locker room, there's a vet side and the rookie side on right across from each other. I go to my locker and there's a picture of a Sports Illustrated article of the University of Miami, and they say our program is crashing, right? So it's the face mask crashing into a glass, right? And they pinned that on my locker. So I'm the last one in the locker room. I walk in, look at my locker. I said, I go to my locker and I take it off the locker. I grab it. And I step in the middle of the floor and I slammed it on the middle of the floor. And I said, let me tell you something. Could none of you motherfuckers play for Miami?
Nah, for real though.
So they hated my guts. So now they cut me. They put me on the practice squad. I say practice squad? First day of practice. When we move back into the town, I'm staying with the vets because the Rooks don't like me because they think I'm a prima donna and all this shit about UM. So I got to stay with these vets. So I'm in this little hotel room where you have like a suite. There's two bedrooms in the room, and then there's a couch, a pullout couch. So I take the pullout couch, you know? So in the morning, the guys are going to practice. I hear them shuffling around, so I pull my sheet over my head. Bro, we got practice. I said, tell Coach Gillespie to send my motherfucking ticket. I'm going home. Fucking practice squad. You know how many fucking practice squad. So I was boycotting practice. I wouldn't go to practice. Every day they come back from 3 days. Bro, coach want to talk to you. I said, you know, I'm tired of shit. I call my grandmother. I say, because my uncle was the one that got me the tryout, you know. So I call my grandma. I say, Grandma. She said, what's the matter, son? I said, I'm on the practice squad. She says, what's that? I said, I'm not playing, and I need to talk to Uncle Richie because I need my ticket to, I need to go home. I need to get out of here. She said, hold on 1 second. She said, Richie. She called him, and then she get back on the phone. She said, son, the stone that the builder refused will always be the head cornerstone. Go and speak to the coach. I say, what? I say, all right, I got to go talk to this guy. I go into the facility. I go in his office. He says, Rohan, you know, we once had an underachiever plural like yourself and blah, blah, blah. You're starting this week. I say, you're starting at rush end. I say, rush end? What the fuck is a rush end? So I said, all right, tell me what to do. So the rush end, right? There's this, before I move to the other position, I'll tell you about that position. My first game was at rush end, and I'm going to play against Doug Flutie. But the rush end position was like me running a Canes hard. You know, you have that play still where the linebacker come off the edge. Yeah. So yeah, you can go, yeah, you can spill it or go around for containment, you know. But I'm playing the end. So every time in practice, I put up my outside foot and the guy and the tackle, like I step and he pushed me a little bit. I was like, wait a minute, got something for this. So in practice, and I just eat him alive, like the tackle. And I'm getting to the, killing this motherfucker in practice, you know. Go ahead, you got to slow down. This is just practice. I say, listen, man, I practice at full speed. So now it's game time. Rohan Marley, what are you going to do this week? I said, well, my job is to psych Doug Flutie. So there was this guy from Virginia Tech, one of our rivals from the Big East at the time, playing. He was starting at linebacker. This guy's like 6'4", 230, specimen-looking guy, you know? So, of course, they got him for political reasons starting. So I'm the fucking rush end. I'm the guy I got to tell him. I mean, I'm playing the rush end. There's three downs. I'm on special teams. So it's like I come off the field. I'm back on the field. I come off the field. So I say, you know what? This don't work for me. You know what I'm going to do? Every time I came off the field, I just stood on the sideline. I skip rope in place. I never stopped moving the whole entire game, you know? But before that, so I'm in the training room, and the guy that's starting at Willie linebacker, I'm getting taped up. He's like, hey, man, you hear what they said about you? I said, well, what happened? It's all over the front pages. You're going to sack Doug Flutie. I said, yeah. You with me? He said, nah, dog, you're on your own. I said, damn, that's what it's like up here? I said, okay, cool, no worries. I never did sack Doug Flutie because they must have been scouting me or something. All I did was touch his jersey. Every time I touch him, he released the ball. Roll away. I was killing the tackle. He was just roll away, like a real professional. You know what I'm saying? Like, real boss man quarterback. You know, like smart, you know, like you know what's your pressure, you know where the danger is, you know what's behind you. He's aware like that. But the funny story is the guy that was playing Willie linebacker hurt his knee.
Just like in high school.
Guess what? Rohan Marley, starting linebacker, this coming week against Memphis. Sorry, some shit. My first game, 22 tackles, tackle calls and fumble, interception, fumble recovery, field goal block. My first game. So the next game was I go to the stadium and they have my, because I took the number one, I wore the number one. Like you. So the next game, they have my dad, my pictures in the, they have my poster up and they're playing my dad's music. So, you know, it's all good and dandy. But then my knee was started giving me trouble later on in the season. And, you know, I ended up, they put me on the IR. Like after I was on the way to get like rookie of the year, you know, regarding my play, but my knee was kind of giving me a little, remember my little MCL. So it's kind of wear and tear on me because it's like 16 games and they play like every, it's just, I wasn't used to playing on the turf, you know? Yeah. So I started to practice on the IR. Well, I started to, you know, recover, but they had two games left. This is how I ended football for me. They had two games left in the season. I've been on the IR. The team is like 5-39, something like that, like really bad. So after practice, I'm going to take a shower. And the linebacker coach, he says to me, "Hey, Rohan, you're playing this week." I said, "Huh?" I said, "Nah, coach, I'm next year's material, you know?" He says, no, you do what we say. I said, "Coach, I'm not ready." I said, "Mentally, I can't play like this. Like, what am I playing for? I come from a fucking championship school. Like, I can't just play to play, like, to lose. I don't have any energy for that shit. It takes a lot for me to get up and hurt these people." So he said, "Well, blah, blah, blah." The next day, I go back to the facilities. My name's on the board, special teams. I'm like, this guy don't take me serious. I says, "All right." I go to my locker. I say, "Well, this belongs to me. This belongs to them. Eh, I don't want that. They can keep that." "Yeah. We have meeting in 5 minutes. I say, "Shirley." She's a secretary. I say, "Shirley." This time I live really close to the facility. I say, "Shirley, I left my playbook at my place. Can you take me there?" "Well, it means we're about to start." But obviously, I get anything at this time. I'm the top dog, you know. "Okay, Rohan, I'll take you home to get your playbook." I said, "Good." She takes me home. I said, "Hey, I'll take a cab back. Go." That's the last time they saw me.
Oh, like that.
Yeah, but guess what happened, though? So now I leave Canada and I come back now to America. And I could not watch football for 5 years. Because I was sick. I was so sick. Good thing I had soccer, you know, but I was sick because I couldn't believe that there's guys that were playing that couldn't even hold my jock, you know? So I was like sick to my soul. I really wanted it so bad, but I could not transition from, I could not take that route. Like I could, and it just wasn't for me, you know? I couldn't transition over, you know? So I just went on and I started to play soccer. I tried out. While I was in Canada playing for the CFL, I met a bunch of Jamaicans. So in the morning I'd practice with the football team, and in the evening I played soccer with the Jamaicans. So I was like getting my touch back and thing. So my goal was to when I left the team, I wanted to go play for Jamaica national team, you know? So I went down there, tried out, I made the national, one of the, like a Premier League. I made their team, but then I tear my hamstring. So I've never torn my hamstring before in my life. But remember, I'm not at UM. I'm not in the weight room. I'm not, it's like there's some like on my own type stuff. Yeah. You know, like So I have the same power, but the muscles aren't like, you know, they're, I've never had this happen to me in my life. I was running, I was playing, and I sat on the bench. Then the coach brought me back in, and I was running, and I felt like someone shot me in the back of my leg. And I was like, what the fuck is that? Hamstring gone. So I came to, I was there, and in the, while I was in Jamaica, I had, 1999, I bought this farm, coffee farm. So I go to the farm in the morning, I'll go farm coffee, and in the evening, I go practice with the team, you know? So I was going to this guy, this Chinese guy, to take out the blood out the hamstring, get it, but I could never get better. Every time I get a little, I play on it, it hurts. I could never, so I said, man, I need to get this right. So I flew from Jamaica and I came to UM and I started to do rehabilitation at Doctor's Hospital, you know, to get my hamstring back. So now my hammy's back and I'm living in America. So there was a meeting for me to have a meeting about my family business in LA. So I'm like, really? I'm going to go to LA. I'm going to try for LA Galaxy. Soccer team. So I get there, I get to LA, and you know, my brother's like, hey man, I gotta ask you something. Because I needed him to give me $8,000 because I had to develop this brand book, right? So he says to me, hey, before I do this, let me ask you something. Business or football? I say, what? I say, how the fuck could my brother knows how much I love. Why is he going to ask me this question? But I had to calculate really fast. I'm like, shit, I'm 32 years old. Something like that. Close to those type of age, 31. I'm like, shit, if I go play for this team, these motherfuckers, they're going to put me on the bench because they're going to play the young guy. And I'm going to be frustrated because they're not going to play me no matter how good I am. They're going to think I'm too old and they're going to frustrate me. So I don't want to go through this frustration I had with UM. With that thing, what they did to me in my last junior year, I didn't want to go to the frustration of like I didn't want to go through it. So I said, all right, business. And that's how I got into business like that. I made that quick decision right there. So my answers are too long, man. Huh?
No, you're good. I actually wanted to ask you, so during all this, because when I was, you know, I told you beforehand, like, I was looking everything up. I didn't know that, you know, you were with Lauryn Hill.
Yeah.
When and where did that happen? Between Canada and, how?
Okay. So after Canada, I jumped back on toward my brothers. So I left school in 95. So I go to Canada in 95, the CFL. So for the end of 95, I go back to Jamaica, November of 95. So 1996 now, I'm on tour with my brothers, Smoking Grooves. And Lauryn was on the tour. So she would always walk by the bus, and I'm their security guard for my brothers, you know? And I, every time she walked by, I blow the horn. So I didn't know her at the time, like, and she, I can't say, hey, what's your name? And ting, ting. Oh, so I got, she says, I got to go to the stage. I'm about to go sing. I said, you sing? Because I'm always late. I'm always, my brothers used to close the show, so I'm always late with them. I never get to hear. But this time we were early. I said, I want to come hear you. Man, I walked out there. I saw her run on the stage. When she ran on the stage, I saw the stage and go like, rrr. I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, wow, you sing like that? And then we start to, you know, and obviously, We grew fun into each other because of the lion strength. And that's how we met then. And then, yeah, that was how we met on tour, like right after college, 96.
Yeah, because I was wondering, because you were talking about CFL.
And yeah, then CFL is 95, just 1 year. I only did 1 year. And then that 95, and then 96 we met, and then we had my 96. And my first son was 97 with her. Yeah. And then it was there. Yeah.
That's pretty cool right there. I didn't know that until Ryan told me.
Yeah.
How many? Well, it was just like crazy seeing that. I was like, because, you know, you look up your name and you see like Lauryn Hill next to it. I was like, that ain't Lauryn Hill, like Lauryn Hill. And then I clicked on it.
Like, boss lady. Boss lady.
I was like, oh my God. I was like, oh, that's, well, that's different. I was like, that's different. But no, yeah, I had to ask about that. But so getting onto your businesses.
Yeah.
You talked about how you had a coffee.
Yeah, well, I bought that from in 1999. I learned all about coffee from seed to cup. And then it took me about 10 years to really understand, like, from the farmer's perspective, how to really do the thing the right way. And then when I started the business, the main thing I wanted to do was, like, if I'm gonna, anything I want to do, it has to be my way, right? So if I'm going to get into business, business got to be like me, not me like the business. So the first, I knew nothing about coffee, but one thing I did know is about Rastafari in regards to like a way of life. So I said, if this business, if it's my farm, it's got to be an organic farm, Eitel farm. So that's the first thing. You can't use any chemicals on the land. So I started to learn about sustainability. The first thing I did was the guys were getting paid a certain wage. I doubled their wages. So I started to help use the farm to help to build, like, help the community, you know, like this creating jobs, you know. Then from 1999 to 2010, you know, during that time, I moved to Ethiopia. I failed at some shit. Like, so between 1999, right, when I bought the farm, me and, you know, and 1999, I got the farm, I do this, I'm in Jamaica, I'm trying out for the soccer team, I'm doing all these things. Between 2004, you know, well, after I got my injury, I moved back to Miami, then I went to Los Angeles, right? But all this time, I still had the coffee farm, you know, because when I got my injury, I left Jamaica. So when I went to LA, I wanted to start a clothing line, a clothing company called Tufcon Clothing. So that was 2004. So while I'm doing that, 2004 to 2006, I had it going for 2 years. And then I ran out of money because the guy was taking too much of a salary. So now it's going to become 2006 and end of 2006 going to 2007. But as a man, all I can think about is like, okay, I failed at everything. I failed at football. I failed at soccer. I failed everything. So I got to start over. Like, I got to start over my mind. Like, what's my foundation, you know? So I said, all right, it's going to be 2007 in September. I want to go to Ethiopia because on the Ethiopian calendar, it's the year 2000. In the year 2000, you know, they talk about the return of Christ, which is an energy. So I wanted to be associated with the oldest calendar. So I packed my stuff. And in September, I told my family, hey, family, I'm moving to Africa. So I moved to Ethiopia in 2007. While I'm living in Ethiopia, this guy says to me, he says, hey, man, what are you doing here? I said, what do you mean? I came home. Like, it's Africa, right? He says, no, you're Bob Marley's son. Do you sing? I say, I don't sing, but I have a coffee farm. So he says, do you know that Ethiopia is the birthplace of coffee? And when the Yemenites would buy coffee from Ethiopia and take it back to Yemen, the Europeans would buy the coffee from the Yemenites. And that's the name. It became Arabica because it says, oh, we got the beans from the Arabs. So it's Arabica. But the truthful name is Ethiopica. I says, bingo. My first signal. I go to this monastery, and the monastery that I go to, I went to Ethiopia 7 years prior. I go back to the 7 years before that I went, I was with a priest and he gave me a cherry, a coffee cherry, and I put it in my pocket. He told me it's going to be my future business because he knew I had the farm in Jamaica. Fast forward now, 7 years later, I go back to the same monastery, which is like a 3.5 hour canoe ride on this thing called Lake Tana. You can look it up. They say all the four winds of heaven, one of the winds blow through these regions. So I'm there. So while I'm walking up to the top of this monastery in the mountain, I get to the top of it and I see the coffee. They're processing the coffee. I'm like, really? So I say to the monk, the priest, I said, let me ask you something. I thought the church didn't deal with coffee because they used to say, oh, coffee is caffeine, the rasta man. I says, I said to him, I said, I thought the church didn't deal with coffee. He said, well, you see the roof has a leak. The priest, they need this. The people, they need that. We have coffee. We trade coffee. I said, bingo. That was my second signal. I go back to Addis Ababa. I hear on the radio that the Ethiopian government has banned Starbucks from buying coffee. I said, what do you mean? Starbucks banned Starbucks from buying coffee. Starbucks doesn't own a coffee farm? I own a coffee farm. I said, wait a minute. You know what? I said, fuck this shit. I called this guy that was interested in investing in what I was doing. I called him. I said, hey, man, let me ask you something. I said, you know who my father is? He said, yes, Bob Marley. I said, yes. And you know that my father is a universal man. I said, do you know that I am also universal? He says, Ronnie, what the fuck are you trying to say? I said, what I'm trying to say is coffee is universal. Because he was so focused on my farm in Jamaica, he wanted to invest in that. I said, listen, fuck having a Jamaican company. Let's have a fucking coffee company, because I realized that Starbucks didn't own a farm, and what they would do, they would go around and source coffee. So I said, I can do the same shit. What's the difference? And I came back to America, and remember I was telling you about, I started that clothing company. So all the things that I designed with the clothing brand, I took it off the brand of the clothes and I made a coffee bag. And then I started to like hustle the coffee. And I would go in front of Whole Foods and ask people to try my coffee. And it took me like a lot of years. This was 2007 to 2008. By 2009 is when I launched the coffee company. And it's been going now. What year is this? 22? It's been going ever since.
Yeah, you know? That's what's up.
Yeah, yeah. It's all over
Canada, right? It's it's in stores everywhere in Canada.
Yeah, in stores everywhere in Canada. It's on Amazon here. It's on I was like doing really good here in America, and then we had to change up some things, so we had to our business work. So I found some new partners, and yeah, it's doing really good now. But how I started that company, I told my family, I said, listen, family, I'm going to create Marley Coffee, but it's going to be my face and my signature on the back. If it works, it's a family business. But if it fails, you can blame me. That's how I got into that type of business. My family entrusted me because I said that. So now I did that. And then I went on to like launch a lot of the family businesses outside of music, like the House of Marley, which is like all sustainable products, all made from eco-friendly materials. House of Marley, we have ever since launched Marley Beverage all over those years, you know? Yeah. But what my new thing now, I just started a wine company. Oh yeah, Ro Marley Wines, I got that. Then I got this hotel in Mexico, that Ro Marley Beach House, I got that.
Marley. Yeah.
I mean, the Ro Marley Beach House.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I actually saw that. So my friend Kevin, he's brothers with Keith Powers. Keith Powers and his girlfriend, Ryan Destiny, they stayed there. And it was it was all over their Instagram. And I was like,
yeah.
I was like, that's Rose Beach House.
Yeah. And now my next thing I'm launching for 20, obviously, is Line Order, my cannabis brand.
I was actually about Line Order. Yeah, so it's cannabis?
Yeah, but Line Order is a movement that started like from, I would tell like Ray and Ricky Williams and LeVar Arrington. This is like 2004. I would speak to Ray like Saturdays, I say, Ray, now, you know what we have to do when we get out there, we used to train a lot. We train together, Like I told you, I changed the way he ate, he different things. I had him running on the beach. I changed his mentality. And because football is life, right? And life is football. Meaning it's what you do. You know what I'm saying? You get up, it's what you do. You get up, you got to, is how you survive. So you got to be the finest of finest material, It's like a boxer. You get up, you skip rope. The first thing you do, that's same as football. You gotta, if you want to be great, you gotta like train. You gotta like sweat always. It's like you gotta be, you have to have a Bruce Lee mentality, you know. So that was the thing I was telling Ray. But I would say, oh yeah, go out there, you gotta dominate, and you gotta devour these guys, you know. Like, so I knew, like, speaking to him on Saturday night, by the time the fucking game time comes, he's gotta talk to all these goddamn people. So I didn't want to waste my time, like, giving you all my energy, and then so the one thing I said, listen, remember always this, right? Because I tell him the way of the lion, be how to be a lion. I said, remember, lion order. So anytime you go on that field, lion order. So it's like lion order. Like, you know, so that's how it kind of built from that mantra, you know. And then after football, you know, we grew and then we started to, like, it became my way of life. It is my way of life. And I then turned that now into, like, a business where it's my brand, you know, it's my movement. And it has to do with a lot about our integrity and why line order. If you look into the world today, right, and you try to find leadership and people that stick to what they say, it's hard, you know. But the lion, yeah, people, but the lion never changes ways. You know, and I tell you this, I went to South Africa. I was on this safari, right? And I have a video of this thing. So I'm driving, there's a lion coming, you know? So we stop and he's walking like this. He's walking towards the vehicle, but he just turns, like he just, like, he don't even look at you, he just turns. And like 100 yards away is like 1,000 fucking gazelle or whatever.
Yeah.
Who? Gazelle?
What's it called, Ryan?
I'm
talking about gazelles, yeah.
Yeah, gazelles and other things and other things. Can I tell you this? The lion was walking by. He did not look left, right, or not. He did not turn his head. Every living animal and creature was at a standstill. Like, they didn't, they frozen. They, like, they did not move. And down there, and he did not take it because it's sundown. So the lion, you know, going to rest. You know, because, you know, the lion, they work, go with the sun. So he's going to go with the sundown. And they know he's not hunting. It's not a hunting time. But they was like fucking like a statue. They did not move. They did not move, and that's the way of the lion. You know, the lion is the lion, and that's just, it's not an ego thing, it's just what you are. So that is really a lion order. It's a principle in how we see ourselves, and I like to reflect myself towards a lion because the lion never changes his ways.
Yeah. Now, I like that a lot. I like that a lot. Actually, in my bedroom, I have this big old painting on my wall. Derek, no, we were roommates last year. I have this big old painting on my wall of a lion. And every morning, like, you see it right when you wake up.
Lion never changes his ways.
I got lion tan right here.
I know you're lion tan. Yeah. All about you. Yeah.
But no, so the Marley Coffee, that's been going a while. Roe Marley Beach House, when did that open up?
That opened up during COVID. And they thought it was crazy idea. Like, what year is this? Not this year, not the last. 2021. What? 2 years ago. And
is that a family? Is everything you do like family? Like,
well, yes, everything I do, but I'm also the one to, I'm a business development for my family. So I normally go out there and take the risk and like create the idea. And then I say, family, come on.
You know? Yeah.
Not always everyone sees your vision in the beginning, so you got to make it work, you know, because my family is also, remember, they're all independent people with independent careers. They're all musicians, and you know what I mean? And I'm, you know, me, I'm an entrepreneur. I like, if I'm on a farm, if I come to this house and in the back of the house, there's a spring, I'm going to figure out a way to bottle that water. If there's a spring in my yard, the water just wasting, let's figure out we can bottle this. So that's me. If I go to Jamaica and I'm have a piece of land and there's coffee growing on the land, I'm like, well, coffee, all it's gonna do is fall on the ground, right? But it's you can also process that. So you just got to learn how to do it. So I like to take these challenges and then anything, again, everything is just what you love to do. And that's just part of life to me. And I give thanks that I was given such a platform in regards to like coming to America, being around the guys at UM. I learned so much about the American culture at UM. And I mean, these guys, they still teach it. We have a group chat. I know nothing. Warren Sapp is one of the smartest guys I know. Like when it comes down to politics and geographic and anything in the world, Warren Sapp has every answer. He's one of the smartest guys I know. Like really, he's one of my best friends. So is Ray. Ray's one of the most, like, they're next level people. Like there's a lot of your guys ahead of you. Like that's why the program is so good, because these guys are for real, you know. Like we're brothers now. Like we're like us, you know. They're for real, man. UM is really like, it's nothing like it, man. There's no place like us, you know. No place like us, bro. I'm telling you, and we love each other, you know what I'm saying? And forever. It's like a forever thing, you know. You guys are my brothers, and I'm your big brother. And that's why it's like this, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, once you're part of like UM, the football, like your family, like completely, like when I hit you up to do this, like it was like no question. You said yes right away. Like it was like nothing. Yeah. Even speaking before, the first time we met, it was just like we've known each other. Like that's just how UM is, like with everybody. Yeah. When I met Jeremy Shockey, like everybody, like it's just, it's like family.
You put working on that green tree. You put working out that green tree.
Yeah.
That green tree practice.
Yeah, that's where we become family right there.
I'll be trying to explain to everybody about green tree, how it's like a brotherhood. But nobody don't understand it, bro. If they're not a part of it, they can't understand it.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it's amazing, man. And I'm just happy that to see, you know, like, especially where this NCAA has come today, you know, that you can, you know what I'm saying, though? Like, you can, because, you know, you can earn a living in college now, you dig? You can, right, D? You know. Yeah.
Got a little bit, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You're one of the good ones. Though. You got a nice, nice brand out of that college and monetized it, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Very good. So I'm really happy about that part.
Well, one thing we like to do at the end of this is, even though you've given us like so much like knowledge and advice and like mantras and quotes, we always ask like for our guests to say, like, is there something, if you could tell someone somewhere, could be about anything, life, football, marriage, anything, what would you tell them, like a piece of advice?
One thing I say to everyone, treat people as you would treat yourself, and know that we're all brothers and sisters and we're equals. There's none greater. You know, like we're human beings. And it's just the key is to love each other and live along together, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
I love
it. Definitely appreciate you coming on the show for real. That's love.
You, thank you for y'all, man.
For sure.
I'm so glad, you know, to be a part of UM, to be able to do things like this, you know, meeting you, talking to you, like your story is insane. And what's crazy is there's so much we probably didn't even get into, like the backstories and stuff like that.
Facts. I had to cut. I can go forever. You know, I can talk for days.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, man.
You know, I mean, I really, really appreciate it. Your story is amazing. Like, honestly, I don't know how you did it is honestly incredible. Coming from Jamaica to America, learning football, and then playing at, like, the University of Miami, playing at the highest level, winning the national championship. Like, being a part of those teams, like, that is unbelievable to me. Like, absolutely unbelievable.
Well, you know, it's a journey, man. And it's like, it's a journey, you know. And you know how it is, though. It's a journey. And you have to give thanks to, you give thanks for the people along the way, because, you know, the good and the bad, they teach you lessons. and it makes you better. And that's what we love about UM. Every day we compete out there, you know?